I read that this is the fourth oldest opera company in the nation.
That's true. We are the fourth longest running opera company. We are the longest running summer opera festival, continuously running. We were founded in 1929. And interestingly enough, the other three companies are the Metropolitan Opera, I believe the Chicago Lyric Opera, and Cincinnati. So they are a lot bigger companies than we are.
Yeah. But you're up there, and it has a storied history. If you can share some of the stories.
The Opera Company was started in 1929. That was a period of time when the institution decided to make more of an investment in the performing arts because it was a way of attracting audiences here. They established a symphony in those days. I believe that was when the Cleveland Symphony started coming up. And the Norton family, to support opera here, gave it a donation of, I believe, $100,000, which in 1928 was a lot of money. And they built what is now Norton Hall, the opera house. And operas, you know, it's just been an important part of Chautauqua. We've had some amazing singers come out of this program. Probably the most famous name who sang here at Chautauqua was Placido Domingo. He performed here in the mid-1960s. My understanding, it was only the second production he'd ever done here in America. Of course, we have a long tradition of opera in English at Chautauqua, which means he sang Samson and Delilah in English. I'm not quite sure how heavy the accent was at the time, the Spanish accent. And it was only, I believe, that fall or the next year that he went off to the to New York City Opera for Don Rodrigo. I think this the premiere that he did at City Opera and became, of course, his career took off from there. So, but we've had many, many artists. In the 20s, in the 30s, it was a core of singers from the Metropolitan Opera who used to come and spend the whole summer here and do all the roles. And the company, one of the reasons we are still here is that this community and the administration have really been very invested in the performing arts here, and they really have supported opera. So that even when the Opera House opened in 1929, it literally was the summer right before the crash. And even in the early 30s, when the institution was in major financial trouble, it really was a period where they thought they might have to close. They kept the opera company going. They really believed it was important. And that continues. That support continues to this day.
Now, you've been the artistic general director since 1995. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how comfortable you are talking about yourself, but I did read that a lot has happened under your leadership in the past 17 years.
Well, I hope so. I mean, I have some very strong predecessors behind me. My predecessor before was Linda Jackson, who is actually now the managing director of Glimmer Glass Opera. Before that was Cynthia Auerbach, who was a director at New York City Opera, who actually I worked with when I was first starting. Leonard Treisch, who had a long connection with Eastman School of Music, and on back into the 30s when Juilliard was very connected with the company. But I think one of the things that I did, the company always did a lot of productions. They were doing four before I came, but I kind of stretched the season out because the season was so tightly scheduled that really I think the productions just by necessity were kind of getting thrown together. And so I first and foremost expanded the season, the time we were here, so that rather than opening a show almost every week, we were opening a show essentially every 2 weeks, which gave us much more breathing time. I believe that the Young Artist Program has expanded a lot, the training aspect of that. Again, building on what was being done here before, but I'm very proud of the quality of the work that we've had. I've also tried to introduce works that have never been done here before. Macbeth, Vanessa, an American opera, Maria Stuarda by Donizetti, Stefano by Verdi. So we've done some rarities in the house, and then a lot of American works as well. There's a history again of that really from the very beginning. A few years ago, though, with the issues of the economy, in 2009, we took a rather severe cutback. It went from four productions down to two. But again, I following the advice of Michael Kaiser and people like that in the industry who say, you know, when in doubt, you know, go for broke. I said to the administration when we were having this conversation that if we were indeed only going to go to two productions, then I really wanted to move one of them into the amphitheater. And that's the first time the Opera Company performed full opera. I believe they used to do some musicals there in the 60s and 70s, but really a full production, sets, lights, costumes, obviously the orchestra, with us performing on the platform of the amphitheater with the orchestra in front. I don't believe that had ever been done before. And again, because I know Chautauqua now after 18 years here, I knew that the audience here is very willing to try things in the amphitheater. They may not stay if they don't like it, but if they like it, they'll stay. But they will all show up at the beginning. So I didn't program the obvious. I didn't go with Traviata or Bohème because people can see that anywhere. I actually did our first season in the amphitheater. I did Norma by Bellini, which is a rarity. It's not performed all that often. And then last year, an even rarer opera, Louisa Miller by Verdi, and we had 3,000 people show up for the beginning of the performance, and really most of them stayed. Most of the people who left, it was only a few hundred, most of them left after the first act because they were taking their children home to put them to bed. And it was really exciting to have that kind of response to opera, to have people coming, probably many of whom didn't even go to Norton Hall because Norton Hall is a smaller venue. You have to pay a little extra to go there. This was under the season pass. And it was really, really exciting. So this year we're doing Lucia di Lammermoor to open the opera season on July 7th. And I think we'll even have more people because it's a title that everyone knows. It's one of the top 10 operas. It's the famous Donizetti opera with a crazy lady who kills her husband and then has a great mad scene and has some of the most well-known and beautiful melodies of opera. The famous sextet from Lucia, which I think anybody who's been anywhere around opera is familiar with. So these are all things that there's been growth and a little bit of retrenchment, but even in the retrenchment, I think a move forward for the company and one that's been very exciting.
Do you think at some point you'll be able to restore some of them?
I certainly hope so. I'm certainly in discussion. I mean, really it comes down to economics, and we are, opera is simply one of the most expensive things to put on. It really uses all aspects of the theater, singers, actors, dancers, orchestra, costuming, the scale is always just larger than pretty much everything else. And so it's always been an expensive venture for the institution, and the institution supports a lot of the arts here. But we have been a discussion about how hopefully we can expand out a little bit more. And I don't want to talk about it too much because I want to see how things go over the next number of months. But my hope is that we will, absolutely. Yeah.
Do you find you're attracting, you mentioned families bringing kids, are you attracting a younger audience, introducing a younger
absolutely.
Audience to opera?
Absolutely. I think it's one of the things that's special about Chautauqua. Any place else, you probably have to put your youngster in a jacket and a tie probably, or certainly dress them up and drag them off to a theater somewhere and spend probably a lot of money to get them a ticket. If you're going to take them to the Met or the City Opera or the local companies, the tickets can be expensive. And then if the child gets bored after 10 or 15 minutes, you've kind of made the investment and you go home early and that's the end of it. But I think here at Chautauqua, young people are very used to being brought to these events. Parents, it's there. It's right in the middle of the community. You can't avoid it. Now, again, they may choose not to spend the whole evening there, whether it's the symphony or the ballet or the opera or the rock concert or whatever's going on in the amphitheater. But they do have the habit of going there and trying it, tasting the smorgasbord, as I call it here at Chautauqua. And that both of our opera productions, and when we do our opera concerts, our highlights concerts, and our pops concerts, there are a lot of young people. Grandparents bring their grandchildren. In Norton Hall, as I said, we have the tradition of opera in English, which has been the case since 1929, and we're one of the few companies left that still does that. Most companies have switched to original language with supertitles, but we've stuck with English because I think most young people don't understand why it would be in anything but English if they've never been to an opera before. I want to treat it as music theater. Some of the traditionalists, the old timers, as it were, they're the ones who say, oh, I like opera in Italian, I like opera in German, because they're used to it. They're opera aficionados and opera lovers. But I think for people who've never been to the opera before, opera in the vernacular is the way to go. And, really until the 1960s, most regional companies in Europe and many regional companies in America still performed in the language of the homeland. The payoff has been that I hear people in our theater react in a way that I don't hear in other opera houses, because I tend not in the program to give every detail of the synopsis. If we're going to do it in English, I think people should kind of discover it as they go along, again, as they would in the theater. And so you hear kind of gasps and laughs and cries and all of that kind of at the right moment. And I don't tend to hear people crying at the Met at performances, maybe sobbing a little bit at Boheme. But I think English does help. And there are trade-offs, of course, with that. But I think ultimately for us, because there are so many young people just around, they're just part of this community. And I've had so many people come over to me and tell me that they saw their first opera in Norton Hall, and that's how they fell in love with it. I remember just a few years ago walking on the balcony during a performance, and a man stopped me. He was sitting in the front row of the balcony and kind of beckoned me over. And he told me, he said, I was at the first season of this hall when I was a kid. He was probably about 9 years old. He had seen, I think, Hansel and Gretel. I don't think he was at the Martha, which opened the production, but I think he said that opened the house. But I think he was at Hansel and Gretel, and had seen an opera in the hall almost every year since. And of course, he was now, in at that time, probably in his 90s, you know. So, yes, I do think we introduce it. I know a number of people. And there are people, like, when the children get to be in the opera, when we have supers, and sometimes the mothers and the children will be in the opera if I need mothers and children. The kids get hooked. I mean, they absolutely do. And even if they find – I find that people in their 20s, 30s, and 40s sometimes don't have the money and the discretionary dollars, to be very honest. They're raising families, all of that. But if they've kind of been introduced to the classics early on, I find that people come back to it when they have more time. They may only go sporadically in the years that they're raising their families. But then when they find they have a little more time in their hands, they'll come back. So,
since you produce over the summer, do you have an opportunity to attract – talent that you might not be able to during the traditional season?
Absolutely. Well, there very much is an advantage to having a summer season, and also having a summer season in Chautauqua. I mean, one of the great lures to come here is that you get to spend 3 to 4 weeks here. And from the very beginning, I've encouraged my guest artists to bring their families, bring their children. We provide them with housing. Our fee structure is certainly not comparable to some of the large, you know, Santa Fe or Glimmerglass, some of the larger festivals. But at the same time, it's a paid vacation for their families, and people love it. And once they're here, I have not heard anybody who's worked here said they didn't want to come back. I think partially because I think we do a very good production. Our production values are good ones, and our musical values are so strong, and we're fun. But I think also because once the kids come, they want to come back summer after summer and go to the camp and go to the lake and go to the concerts and see their parents perform and spend time with their parents while they're rehearsing. Whereas during the winter, very often the father or the mother is singing, have to go off somewhere for 3 or 4 weeks and leave their kids behind while they're in school. And this is a chance for the whole family to be together. So, and it's, you know, we never leave our audience at Chautauqua. We live in the community. We're next door to those people. I mean, I've had people leave food at my front door and gifts just to or notes about the production. You go in the post office the morning after the show, and there's five people who come over and let you know how you did. And generally it's generally the feedback's good, but they'll also let you know what they didn't like. Immediately, you get immediate response and feedback here at Chautauqua. But it's what makes the place very special. You know, anywhere else I work, if I go in as a freelance director, I direct the production through opening night, and then I leave. Here, of course, I stay for the whole run of our productions, but also I'm in contact with the community constantly, and I love that.
One thing I've learned today from not only you with the opera, but all the programs, is the training aspect. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that there was such an effort towards that. Almost institution-wide.
Yes. Well, Chautauqua was founded on the idea of education. I mean, when it was founded in 1874, it was a Sunday school teacher's retreat in an attempt to teach and expand the knowledge and women at a time, expand the knowledge of women at a time when women weren't regularly educated. So there has been an aspect of education here for years.
Well, I understood that, but yeah,
the arts.
You're not just producing.
Yes,
you're teaching.
Well, the young artist program at the opera was started in 1968 by Leonard Tree. She started bringing in students on a regular basis, I think from Eastman and then from other schools. It was expanded a little later when Cynthia Auerbach took over. I think in the early 80s, she added another component. She added the studio program to what was then the apprentice program. I think up to that point, they were using a lot of community members in the chorus. And since then, since the late 60s and certainly the early 80s, this has been a program of anywhere from 25 to 35 singers who come every summer and understudy major roles, do supporting roles, sing in the chorus. We have movement classes, combat, acting workshops. Voice teachers come through. Our kids at some point get the chance to work with Marlena Mollis at the voice program. So there really is it really is about development of artists. And for that reason, the artists that I bring in, I try to bring as established an artist as I can. People who are singing at the Metropolitan Opera, people who until recently were singing at New York City Opera, Houston, San Francisco, because that way our young singers are getting a chance to work with people who are out in the business, out in the field, and with artists who will talk honestly about the positives and the negatives of being in our business. It's not easy. As glamorous as it looks, it is not an easy field to be in. It's very difficult to get established in, and you live on the road a lot. There are a lot of issues around it, but it's good to have people you can talk to who can tell you the realities of it. So there's a school of music here. There's a school here that has dance, art, theater, and voice and orchestra as part of that. There is anything from preschool education here at Chautauqua all the way through adult education. And in the school of music, in the school, there are over 400 people in the dorms there. And then, of course, we have our own training program for the opera program. Yeah.
You touched on a little bit on the first program that you're presenting, but what's if you want to talk more about that and the second one?
Sure. Twist my arm. I'll talk about the opera. So, yes, we're opening with Lucia de Lammermoor in the amphitheater, and that's July 7th. A terrific cast. Our leading lady is Rochelle Durkin. Rochelle is a native of Australia, sung a lot with Western Australia Opera, and was in the Young Artist Program at the Metropolitan Opera just a few years back. And, in fact, last year went on for Anna Netrebko, who had to cancel a performance of Don Pasquale, and it was a national broadcast. She had never really rehearsed on the set, and suddenly there she was doing a live performance in front of the Metropolitan Opera audience and a live broadcast across the country. Had a great success with that, has been very busy since. And so her first time here at Chautauqua, and very happy to have her. She's going to be fantastic, Lucia. Our tenor is Greg Carroll. Greg came here last summer for the first time in Louisa Miller. He is also now on the roster at the Met. In fact, he was just covering Placido Domingo in their Enchanted Island, the Baroque opera they did. And the Met is really keeping an eye on him. It's quite an instrument. I mean, it's really terrific sound and a wonderful, wonderful singer and performer. Our baritone is Todd Thomas. You know, Todd, I always say, is one of Chautauqua Opera's success stories. He was in the Young Artist Program in the late 80s and then went on to work all over the country. I mean, he's had a regular career just singing in companies all over America. So he brings his family up and does an opera with us every so often. So we're glad to have him back. And our bass is Richard Bernstein. Richard, I've known Richard since he was a student, and he's now on the roster at the Metropolitan Opera, and he's in the cast as well. And Joseph Culinari, who's conducting the productions, done many productions here. We know each other from our City Opera days when he was chorus master at City Opera and I was directing there. And he then joined the roster at the Metropolitan Opera as a conductor. And just this year was appointed artistic director of the Western Australia Opera in Perth. So he runs the opera program at Mannes School of Music in New York. So he has a wide range of talents as both an educator and a conductor and a producer. So it's great to have him back. And our second production is a title that's less well known, but by one of the most famous composers in opera. It is an opera called Manon Lescaut, and it is by Puccini. Puccini, of course, wrote Madame Butterfly, La Boheme, Turandot, the operas that everybody knows. Manon Lescaut is not done as much, and I don't know really why it's not, mostly because it's just really hard to do. It's a big cast and a complicated piece. Oh, but my God, is the music gorgeous. I mean, I've loved this opera since I first heard it as a teenager and finally got to direct it about 3 years ago in Hawaii, and I'm bringing that production here to Chautauqua. And I've wanted to do it here for a long time. It's just one, this is a young Puccini who, it's almost like an embarrassment of riches. It's just one gorgeous melody after another. It's like he couldn't stop writing melodies. And the music is so beautiful, and the choral writing is so beautiful, and the situation, you know, the production is beautiful. It's 18th century France about a young country girl who basically sleeps her way to becoming a wealthy mistress in Paris. The only problem is that along the way, she falls in love with a poor poet. And, you know, that's the problem of life. You know, do you go for the poor poet or you go for the rich old man? Big opera problem. And she just can't make up her mind. And of course, it tears her apart. She gets herself into a lot of trouble. And ultimately, both of them are banished to the worst possible place the French could think to send anybody. And that was New Orleans, Louisiana. And she comes to a tragic end in the deserts, as it says in the score, the deserts of Louisiana. If you've ever been to Louisiana, it's not a dry spot in it. But the music is great, and we have a terrific cast for this. Barbara Shervis is coming to sing here for the first time, and I've known Barbara off and on for years too. I remember her actually many years ago in the chorus of City Opera, but it also shows that, you know, you can start in the chorus and go on to be doing leading roles, and she's indeed singing in regional companies around America, and she's stunningly beautiful and a wonderful singer, and I think she's going to be a marvelous Manon. And the tenor is Robert Bro, who was a student of mine when I was teaching in Ann Arbor many years ago. And again, watched his career just take off. And Bob has done many, many roles with us over the years. So he's coming back for the role of the poor poet, Des Grieux. And the baritone is another singer who's sung here many times, Michael Chioldi, who came out of the Houston Opera Program many years ago and now is singing again all over the country and all over the world. And he plays the brother of Manon. And then I'm very pleased to have Kevin Glavin coming. Kevin is, I think, one of the finest buffo comic bass baritones in opera. We've worked together only once, and I've tried to get him before, but now he's available and he's coming to do this. The comic old rich man. And our conductor is Jim Mina. Jim is the artistic and general director of Opera Carolina. He and I, again, go way back to Pittsburgh Opera when he was the chorus master there and conducting. And we've done many, many productions together, both here and in Charlotte. So I'm happy. He's, again, a kind of Puccini expert. And I think I'm very excited about doing this piece. And it's a great piece for the young artist because the choral writing and for the chorus, it's just it's gorgeous. So even if you don't know this opera, you do not want to miss this. Again, if you love La Boheme, there isn't an opera lover I know who doesn't. If you love Madame Butterfly, which everybody in the opera world loves and adores, Turandot, you will not be disappointed in Manon Lescaut. And the dates for that are the 27th and 30th of July.
Yeah. I would imagine being here at Chautauqua, selling tickets is not an issue.
I'll be very frank. Our theater is a very old one, and it's not air conditioned. Yeah. So some of our ticket sales are based upon what the weather is like that day. You know, but our core audience comes, and I was marveled, certainly my first years here, that it could be a very hot night, and there would be, in those days, there were people wearing ties and jackets still at the opera in those days. I stopped that. I had a lot of friends down in the audience. I would go up the aisle before the performance and loosen their ties and tell them to open your shirt, because we want people to be comfortable. I don't think opera should be formal, certainly not in a summer setting. You should be comfortable when you come. You should come here the way you go to the musical theater or anything else. It's to enjoy yourself and be relaxed. And it's about the performance, not about any kind of traditions around the performance. But even on a warm night, we get a very big audience there. And as I said, in the amphitheater, 3,000 plus. Yes, there's an opera audience here for sure.
Well, thank you.
Mark, thank you.